From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live.
Turn on Alexa and ask her to play
TNT Radio.
Turning on anything else usually requires dinner and conversation, dressing up and brushing your teeth, and I'm already tired.
This is today's news talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to this sunny Friday afternoon on TNT Radio. I'm Nicola Charles, better known on socials as the White Rabbit. And I think we can call this drive time in Melbourne. If you hear any Harley Davidsons going past in the background, I do apologise. I have some very noisy neighbours. They're having fun though. They're enjoying the sunshine. So I thought what I wanted to do first off today is draw attention to this Daily Mail story that's just broke in the UK. It's flying around socials, and I honestly can't believe that the mainstream media are still using this term anti-vaxxer, but sadly they are. And the headline of this Daily Mail story is anti-vaxxer nurse who injected up to 8,600 elderly patients with salt water instead of COVID vaccine walks free from a court in Germany. This story, obviously, that's a real headline grabber, isn't it? So I picked it up. Have a listen to this. An anti-vaxxer nurse who injected up to 8,600 elderly people with saline solution instead of COVID-19 vaccine has walked free from court. Red Cross nurse Anti-T39 jabbed thousands of elderly patients at a vaccine center in Germany with what she told them was BioNTech Pfizer, but it was just saltwater solution. I want to give this lady a hug, don't you? The nurse who administered the fake vaccines at the Shormans Jab Center in Friesland, Northwest Germany, was given just 6 months on probation. Have a listen to this. This is why I'm reading this to you. She was found guilty of 6 counts of intentional assault by Oldenburg District Court, Lower Saxony State, on November the 30th. So this nurse who administered a harmless substance to elderly people has been found guilty of 6 counts of intentional assault. Now, when you think about the vaccine adverse reaction reports and the quality of those reports, that people are suffering neurological difficulties, that they're suffering blood clots that in some cases are causing them to have limbs removed, there are pregnant mums losing babies. I don't see any of those people being charged with intentional assault. And this nurse who injected salt water has been charged on 6 counts. It's really extraordinary to me how we have these incredible double standards going on between them and us. And we very much know who the them is, don't we? So I found this fantastic thing that had been sent to me today and I wanted to read it out. It seems to me that at some stage we should all receive some sort of honours degree. After all, for the past few years, we've had to become quasi-experts on a myriad of topics. We've learnt about viruses, pathogens, parasites, cells, vaccines, drugs, nanotechnology, blood clots, immunity in general, bioweapons, DNA modification, mRNA technologies, gain of function, food additives, water, weather modification techniques, chemtrails, geoengineering, riot control, common law, the straw man concept, the hidden meaning of words, the fraudulent nature of the financial systems, banksters, fraudsters, secret societies, cults, Satanism, rituals, paedophilia, the abortion industry, human trafficking, organ trafficking, border control, immigration, false flag events, crisis actors, wars for profit, corruption beyond belief, control systems, surveillance, censorship, electoral processes, central bank digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, fiat currencies, fractional reserve banking, gold, silver, big tech, and big pharma. I think we deserve to congratulate ourselves for going through this intense, painful, shocking, exciting, unbelievable sobering, enlightening course in truth and reality. When is the graduation ceremony? Well done, everyone. We have, haven't we? Don't you feel that? The learning for a lot of us has been absolutely immense. And now we have a responsibility. We're almost like teachers, aren't we? Because teachers have a responsibility to teach our children and not talk to them about some of the horrid stuff that's going on in schools now. But we, the awake, also, I feel now, have a responsibility to pass on to those who might not be as awake as we are the truth about what's going on. Listening to TNT is a really good start with that, by the way. They could literally listen to the truth all day. So, I thought that was really interesting when that was sent to me. And I actually woke someone up about 2 days ago, someone I didn't think could be woken up. And our relationship has moved on as friends, leaps and bounds ever since. So it's very healing and it's something we should definitely do. So now I think we're going to talk to Jeremy about some of the other new stuff that's floating around the interweb today. How are you, Jeremy?
Yeah, good, thanks, Nicola. Yeah, that was a massive list, wasn't it, of subjects that people have got their heads around. And I think we do need to look outside the box because the mainstream media wouldn't talk about half of those issues, would they?
No. And you know what? I only read out half the list. Because I knew you were coming on, Jeremy. I didn't want to jump all over your slot. But, yeah, it really is phenomenal when you see it written down like that and you think, crikey, you know. Because before we were all doing other things. I was an actor and a radio host and now suddenly, you know, we're all experts, aren't we? Or at least we're trying to be. And they've done that, haven't they? Because they've left us in the dark. You know, we're almost blind and in the dark and we have to find our own way. So more power to people who share the truth, I think.
Yes, very true. Now, Nicola, I have a story here that I don't know whether you've had a chance to look at, but I think it's important. It's a new survey of American voters on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. They don't see the conflict in Ukraine as a top priority. So have you had a chance to see it, Nicola?
No, I haven't. But you know what? I agree with it because I don't see it as a top priority either because I have grave concerns. And this is just my own personal conspiracy theory that what we're watching there is theater to aid the sort of financial shenanigans that need to be going on. I could be wrong and I wouldn't want to offend anyone, but it seems like theater. And the reason I say that is that we were on the brink, we were told by mainstream media, of a nuclear holocaust just before the midterm elections, and the day after, it just went away.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of distractions, of course, and Ukraine, in some ways, is a distraction, but it's a real issue in itself, and people are, you know, hurting in the region, particularly those poor people who are being attacked by Azov Battalion, the neo-Nazis in Ukraine, which the mainstream media will not talk about. They make out that it's all Russia's fault, which nothing could be further from the truth. But this new poll, it asked over 2,000 people about the foreign policy issues they wished the government would focus on. And according to the survey, which was published on Tuesday, Democratic voters cared more about things like climate change and preventing another global pandemic, which is a bit laughable, but nonetheless.
Oh, well, that's come from their side, so good luck with that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Non-issues, but nonetheless, at least they see Ukraine as not affecting their immediate lives. But then they come up with some other imaginary ideas. But Republicans, according to the survey, wished the government would focus on immigration, terrorism and drug trafficking. Now, support for Ukraine only ranked 6th among Democrats and 10th among Republicans.
Wow.
So well down the list, which is encouraging to see. Now, the Biden administration has already committed close to $20 billion in so-called security assistance to Ukraine. I say so-called because, of course, it's not really assisting Ukraine, it's destroying Ukraine. But nonetheless, some people think it's assisting them. And Biden is trying to push through an additional $37.7 billion aid package before the Democrats lose control of the House in January, because they've had the midterms, but the effect of the political change doesn't happen until early January. So the Biden administration wants to rush this extra money through to send lots and lots of weapons to Ukraine. But the incoming Republican majority has indicated that it won't support massive aid packages for Ukraine once it takes over. For instance, GOP leader Kevin McCarthy, he had previously stated that Congress would not be offering a blank check to Ukraine. So I think it's an interesting story.
There's a reason for that. There's a reason for that, Jeremy, and that's because more money has been sent in that conflict than for any other conflict in human history. And the way I see it, I'm really bemused by how big the effort has been to fund this by the UK and by the USA, because war aid, you've got to be really careful, haven't you? Because war aid is essentially funding violence and death. So when you talk about we're helping Ukraine and Ukrainians, and of course we must protect those at risk from the Azov battalions, you've also got to acknowledge the violent death of people that you'll be causing, and they would also be probably innocent Russians. So yeah, I don't agree with sending any more money. So I can see why it's a long way down the list.
Yeah, sure. And the Democrats, they're meant to be so-called progressives, but every single Democrat voted for sending weapons to Ukraine, even the so-called peaceniks. It just made
no sense.
They
like a war, don't they? They like a war machine.
It's nuts.
Do you ever get the feeling that someone's skimming something off the top there, Jeremy? I think, come on, it has to be.
Definitely. There's big money. Follow the money. So initially, when Russia launched its military intervention, I don't say invaded because it wasn't an invasion. If Russia wanted to invade, they would have really gone in full on. But it was a military intervention in Ukraine in February when it started. The vast majority of Americans did support it, and they supported. They supported the aid to Ukraine. The so-called aid. And that remained true for the early months. But now, more than 9 months later, the support is very, very much down the priority list for most Americans, no matter what their political colours are.
Yeah. I think people have fatigue, you know, and they know this because they use these events. You know, Klaus Schwab has told us this is a great opportunity. But he was talking about COVID. So we've all got COVID fatigue. So along comes this conflict and now we've all got war fatigue. And so they're jumping on the, pandemic two is just around the corner. And, you know, we used to sit down in front of our telly boxes, didn't we, and watch movies, and we don't need to anymore because the news is just constantly bringing us the next drama, the next thing to make us go, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. And we're just fatigued by it because, for a start, why haven't any of these so-called leaders, if Biden is such a fantastic lefty leader, why has he not gone to the table at all and discussed peace? Isn't that what leaders are supposed to do?
Good leaders would. And, of course, the intention is never peace here. The intention is to drag the war on as long as possible. And the US is supplying weaponry, which at the moment, the latest contracts I've been looking at, won't arrive in Ukraine for another 3 years. So they seem to be intending to keep this war going on for as long as, who knows, as long as Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, it's just completely nuts. I don't think it could possibly last that long. If Russia, it's a bit hard to know because Russia doesn't want to get involved in World War III, but at the same time, they cannot. If they want their territorial sovereignty, they cannot give up. They cannot, concede defeat because, you've got to remember, nuclear weapons on Russia's doorstep will take 5 minutes to hit Moscow. That Russia will not have time to react. So they cannot give up on this. But at the same time, they can't afford to push too hard, or this would, trigger the Article 5 and, that could lead to World War III too. So there are a lot of complex issues there. So it possibly could drag on a long time. I know the military industrial complex would love it to drag on a long time. They don't want anyone to win a war so long as they can just keep making money from the weapon sales.
And we've all got to be really careful because they've for whatever reason, this conflict is occurring on the border of Russia. And, you know, as they like to tell us, you know, the globe is shrinking all the time. And if Russia really wanted to, it wouldn't be hard to take that conflict to the doorstep of any of us. Okay, so they are literally playing, and this is probably not the right term, but they are literally playing Russian roulette with our lives because we don't want it in our Five Eyes nations. And it feels a bit negligent on their part to be letting it go on this long. And they sort of have to, don't they? Because as you say, early in January, when the GOP sort of put their foot down, the Conservatives enter the House. They might not immediately turn things on its head, but they're going to start asking a lot of questions. And from what I've heard, a lot of questions is something that the Biden administration is not really a fan of. Thanks so much for that report, Jeremy. We're going to take a quick break on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Timothy Shea is talking about.
Monkeypox, 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 monkeypox. It's not racist to call the disease known as monkeypox, monkeypox. It's not insulting to monkeys. We could call it butt sex pox, if you'd rather, because that's how it's transmitted these days. It's not necessarily how it's transmitted. It's a contact transmission. Anybody could get it, just like smallpox. But monkeypox is no more racist than smallpox is discriminatory against little people, right? Or chickenpox is offensive to chickens. I had chickenpox. Does that mean you're calling me chicken? I'm not a chicken. I'm not chicken. I'm brave. Don't call it chickenpox just because I got it. Grow up, people. Monkeypox. There.
The Timothy Shea Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A deadly virus emanating from Wuhan, China is sweeping across the globe.
Something is off.
The disease caused by the novel coronavirus has been titled COVID-19.
What we're being told doesn't add up.
It's so important in this crisis that we in. That people
Congress passes a multi-billion-dollar bill that will bring...
There is no cure, no way to treat this illness. All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
All we can do
is wait for a vaccine.
There must be a doctor out there who's questioning this.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm the vice chairman of internal medicine.
The only chance to reduce the risks of hospitalization is early home treatment. We can beat this pandemic.
Patients actually think the virus is untreatable. There's such a focus on the vaccine. Where's the focus on people sick right now?
The pressure to suppress any hope of treatment is extraordinary.
Why the single-minded focus on the vaccine? What is that? What is that about?
That's really going to be the goal of investigative reporters to figure this out.
Unprecedented lockdowns, devastating economic damage, huge violations of personal freedom, families separated from their loved ones, all in the name of a medical emergency.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to the entire world.
The hope we have of protecting our communities is to get a needle in every arm.
I am not going to follow what you are suggesting and let the virus slaughter my patients.
John, I'm watching what's happening. This is a treatable illness.
I don't think this is a matter of academic debate and confusion. What the evidence shows is that this is an organized criminal enterprise. They call this a business opportunity.
People need to know the truth.
We are witnessing the greatest organized crime in history, to the tune of trillions of dollars.
The biopharmaceutical complex is using censorship, propaganda, and manipulation to keep people living in fear. But what we need now is courage.
The Courage to Face COVID-19. Available at CourageToFaceCOVID.com.
There is no scientifically justifiable reason for vaccine mandates.
It's entirely about forcing compliance and punishing anyone who dares dissent.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to TNT Radio, the first hour of the show. It's Friday. Oh, I can't wait for the weekend. Can you? It's all going to be Christmas shopping and we're just going to forget about everything. The skies were actually allowed to be blue today in Victoria, so I took lots of photographs of it because it's been quite a rarity for us lately. So now, with the threat of ongoing global pandemics, pandemic two apparently on its way, vaccine mandates, climate lockdowns, and other catastrophes were promised by the powers that be, it's not hard to question if population control is a prime objective of the elites who seem to control global health and climate policies. I don't remember voting any of these guys in, do you? Well, William Kay attained a BA in English in 1982 and a law degree in 1985. After briefly practicing law, William went on to establish small businesses and non-profits. He's written two books, The Green Swastika, Environmentalism in the Third Reich, and From Malthus to Mifepristone, gosh, I don't think I've said that right, a primer on the population control movement. William's produced or appeared in countless radio shows, and quite soon this one, and has had hundreds of his articles posted across dozens of websites. He's been an outspoken critic of the catastrophic anthropogenic global warming hypothesis. We're going to ask him about that big word in a moment, and related policies for 35 years. That means he's as over it as we are. Hello, William. How are you?
I'm good.
I want you to give us, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I want you to give us, aside from the correct pronunciation of your publications, I want you to give us, in your view, some basic facts on the history of the population control movement.
Okay. The term is mifepristone. It was formerly called RU486. It's the abortifacient pill.
Okay.
Wow. There's been every state, every government in history has had some sort of natalist policy. There have been times when they've been promoting large families, and there are times when they're promoting infanticide. No country has ever avoided this policy. If we're talking about the English-speaking world, the movement around Malthus starts, you know, in 1798. It corresponded with the arrival of actual welfare policies. Before then, there were the poorhouses, you know, with the signs, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. Those became unworkable, and some of the parishes and governments were just starting to distribute free bread, and this caused a panic amongst the local gentry that Malthus participated in, that, you know, these people will start breeding out of control if we just start giving them free food. And they were adamant of the opinion that if you did not have a job, you should starve to death. They were all of that opinion as well. So Malthus builds up quite a disciplehood. He wasn't just an author. His books were bestsellers across England. So he was quite a wealthy man, but he was also a high-ranking figure in the Anglican Church. And he was also the first professor of political economy at the British School of India's university. So it was... He was a high-ranked, influential figure in his own time. About a decade or so after his death, his disciples organized a group called the Malthusian League, and they were the driving force behind the legalization of contraception. And they frequently got busted for obscenity laws because they had books that would show people how to use contraceptives. But they were also commercially involved in the contraceptive market. And that's part of this whole movement from beginning to end. It was always a moneymaker for the people at the center of it.
Of course.
But they were frequently being charged. But when they would take the stand in their trials against them for distributing condoms or for distributing what was deemed indecent literature, the defenses they gave to judge and jury was that the world is overpopulated, England is overpopulated. If we do not immediately start to contracept, particularly the poor, they are going to breed out of control. It is this same social movement. This movement we're talking about, it exists today. It just gets bigger and bigger. This is precisely the social movement. For a long time, it self-refers to itself as the eugenics movement. And they were very keen on not having this sort of unfit to breed. And they had, there was this very deep white versus white racism going on, like different groups of white people developing, particularly the European aristocracy had this, they believed in the science of phrenology, and they were convinced that the skull shapes of the aristocracy in Europe were quite different from the skull shapes of the common people.
And
it took a long time to convince them that this wasn't true, but there was a deep racism they had, and they certainly wanted to contracept, and this moves into the abortion movement, which starts in the early 20th century.
Right. So when they talk about...
I can march you through the thing right to the modern day, but it's the same organization. It's always sort of these oligarchic elements. They talk about overpopulation, but in practice, it's very targeted who they are trying, whose birth they are trying to suppress.
And I do want you to continue with that. We're definitely going to continue with that. We are going to continue with it after the news. And yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for listening to us on TNT Radio. We'll be back soon.
Now,
I've got good news and bad news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. China has blasted the BBC, accusing the British broadcaster of making up lies to tarnish Beijing's image in the West as it clamps down on COVID protests. Ukraine has again been accused of shelling civilians in the centre of the Donetsk city in the country's east, and France has admitted it has run out of weapons to send to Ukraine as the endless flow of arms depletes Western stockpiles.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT Radio on this lovely sunny Friday afternoon. We're talking with William Kay. William, it was really interesting, one of the things you said, and I do want you to continue with that timeline, but I love the way these groups that do this hide behind this term equity when that's obviously very far from their mind. And you talked about white-on-white crime. That's interesting because that's clearly what's happening in the Five Eyes nations currently. And for years, all we've heard is black-on-black crime. But you're right, the bigger crime that's going on here is white on white crime.
Well, there was for the eugenic movement, there was quite a long time where there was an extreme sort of white versus white racism. It lingers on. You hear terms like white trash, hillbilly, redneck. These are often terms that white people are using against other white people. And keep in mind that, you know, the whole abortion movement, when it really became a mass movement in the late 1960s, we were already at a time when sort of the upper crust and the upper middle class, they already had access to abortions. It was sort of hush-tops done in the hospitals. It was expensive. It was sort of quasi-black market. But the political campaign was to make sure that other social classes and other races had access to abortion everywhere it happened. The idea was to make it free and on demand and fully available in certain neighborhoods. So it always had that spin to it. And that program, of course, then went global. There's many aspects to it. I'll take another angle because it's not just contraception and abortion. There's also sterilization is a big part of the modern population control movement. And it underwent a catharsis, the sterilization campaign, in the 1950s and 60s, the Rockefeller Foundation, not the foundation, but elements within the family, funded a program that went to Puerto Rico, and they practiced this thing of postpartum suggestion. Just after a woman gives birth, if you ask her if she wants to be sterilized, she's extremely likely to say yes, particularly if you ask just the right question. And using that technique, in 10 years, they sterilized over one-third of all the women in Puerto Rico. And they started developing that technique and other techniques like that, and they took that to the global stage. In the U.S. right now, there's over 700,000 surgical sterilizations of women happening every year. And in almost no instance did the woman pick up the phone and call the doctor and say, I'd like to get sterilized. In almost every instance, it's post-birth or it's post-abortion or it's post some other medical procedure other than sterilization, and they talk them into it.
You're absolutely right.
In the book, there's a set. Go ahead.
Well, I have a number of friends who had trouble conceiving, and they went for IVF. And the IVF was, you know, extremely expensive. And of course, they end up going through two or three rounds and they're told it didn't work while these businesses are busy getting rich from their pain. And then for a good number of my friends who did actually get a child out of their IVF process, they were told afterwards that something had gone horribly wrong inside them and that they needed a hysterectomy, but it was okay now because they had their child.
I know of two women, very similar stories, went to get other surgeries performed and just these really high pressure tactics to get sterilized. And in one instance, when she refused, he said, get another doctor. Like he was not going to do the one operation if he was not going to do a sterilization as well. In the book, I've got a chapter called Political Gynecology, because a lot of the leaders like Guttmacher and people like that who were the founders of American obstetrics and gynecology were fanatical population control freaks. They were members of groups that advocated, you know, dramatic reductions of world population. There's a guy who writes an article for World Population Balance magazine, and he boasts of having performed an abortion a day for the last 45 years.
Wow. I mean,
they sort of have marks on the walls of these guys as to how many abortions they're doing. They believe in what they're doing. And it's all, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you sort of covered it there, and they believe in what they're doing. Do they sort of feel that it's the responsible thing that they're doing, that it is their duty to sort of take on this mantle? Because I wanted to talk to you about which elite groups are driving this. And we know certain elites are obsessed with eugenics and population control. But really, they've sort of been handed the baton from what you're saying from generations prior, right?
Oh, yeah. The population control movement has been, within the English-speaking world, it's been an organized movement since, you know, 1798, and it's been a move since the mid-19th century. It's been a movement that chartered societies that had, you know, boards of directors and AGMs that published books that were widely read across the UK. It's been that kind of an organized movement for 160 years.
Wow.
In the 1960s, there was one particularly astute group called the Population Crisis Committee, and they were one and all population fanatics. And they had penetrated the White House to the effect, like people, I don't know if you're familiar with names like Robert McNamara and William Westmoreland. If you're a Vietnam War history buff and you know about the Johnson administration, there's several people that he was never away from. Like the only time he was not talking to some of these people was when he was in the washroom. And every one of them were members of the Population Crisis Committee. And that is where you saw a fundamental change in U.S. foreign aid. From that point forward, no country was going to receive U.S. foreign aid unless they had a population control agenda in place. And that the U.S. aid would itself start distributing condoms. They weren't allowed to do abortions, but they could do everything but abortions. And then other private groups would come in and do the abortions.
So can I ask you a question then?
Transformed U.S. aid. Go ahead.
This is really relevant. Sorry to cut you off there. It just came to me.
No, go ahead.
Because I do have a suspicion, because I have young children. My youngest child of three is about to leave primary school. And they are really pushing this transsexual agenda. And, you know, it's quite grotesque, some of the things that they're introducing into these children's minds. And obviously, a lot of people are very angry about it. And I did think, you know, this is just a way for them to start hormone therapy, it seems, that would potentially sort of, it would be your choice because you wanted to be a different sex that day, but it would start the process of sterilizing you, surely.
Yes, this I view the transgender movement as being a subsidiary of the population control movement. I view, in fact, the whole LGBT gay agenda as being subsidiaries of the population control movement. Keep in mind, the population control movement isn't like there. The United Nations Fund for Population Activities, a population control group, it's got a budget of over $1 billion a year. In New York City, there's a group called Population Council. It's got an official budget of $60 million a year, but it also holds the U.S. rights to mifepristone, RU486. So it makes money off every one of those sales. And I don't know where it goes. But there's some massive organizations there, and they're absolutely devoted to this cause. The issue of transgenderism, in the book I covered, there's a chapter in there called The LGBT Vanguard. And this is the future. It's the future of the movement. You can see a lot of statements like the early 20th century. Some of the first publications that openly discussed transvestism and homosexuality, other than them being sins and crimes, came out of the eugenics movement. And very shortly after there, you see a lot of population control movements. This is in the 1920s. Are promoting homosexuality as a way to stem population growth. Right. Fast forward to the mid-1960s when the movement's really starting to go into overdrive, where they're legalizing abortion all over the world, where homosexuality is being now promoted in the mass media, things like that. There were several statements by leading population control planners from the Ford Foundation and groups like that, saying that one of the mechanisms we have to use is the promotion of homosexuality. This will be an excellent way to suppress birth rates in key areas. So they were openly discussing that in the late 1960s. And since then, you can just see year after year the agenda builds. And just how aggressive do these people want to sterilize people? A U.S. federal court judge in the 1970s found that there was a group of doctors, quite a large group, who were sterilizing 100,000 to 150,000 American women per year on the pretext that their welfare payments would be suspended if they did not go through with the procedure. And it was an organized group that was doing it. This is how badly they want to sterilize people.
Well, so that's actually linked into something.
Every kid that goes transgender is being sterilized. It's just another one. These guys, they get up in the morning hoping to sterilize people. They sterilize people, and they go home.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask is that, look, obviously it's our human instinct, okay, to want to have a family. And I think they're looking at this the wrong way round. They're trying to fix the problem now, and we're all here. And that's called something else. That's not called population control. That's murder and genocide, mass murder. They've done this the wrong way around, because I have teenage daughters and we talk all the time about the fact that, well, both of them have stated that they don't want to have children, quite frankly, because of the state of the world right now. They wouldn't want to bring children into it. And they said to me, why don't governments offer sort of a tax rebate, a one-off payment, a down payment on a home? Why don't they offer financial help for people who don't want to contribute to overpopulation before it happens? But we never see that, you know, because I'm all about openness and transparency. And they just talk to us as if we're idiots. They call it something else because they're in this secret club. And I guess every generation, when they pass the baton, gets funded by different people in different groups, and they think, oh great, I'm in the murder club, you know, I'm in the club where I can help control this population. Why don't you incentivize not having families? Why don't you tell us the truth about the state of the world population, and we might not have gone ahead, and I might not have gone ahead and had three children. What do you think about incentivizing it, William?
Well, I don't perceive any population problem at all. I don't think the world is overpopulated. I think the world could sustain a vastly larger population than this. Much of the world's land is not being utilized for anything. Vast parts of the world are absolutely empty, and these are very productive parts of the world. The Amazon River Basin is bigger than Europe. Nobody lives there, and it's this combination of a huge amount of fresh water and sunshine. If it was converted into agricultural purposes, you could feed the whole planet a few times over. And there's a lot of places like that. I live in Canada. There's much of North America is completely empty. I mean, we could easily put a billion people in Canada. Same with Australia. The resources that you have there, you know, the fuel, the coal, the uranium, all the stuff that you have. Australia could have a billion people living on it. What you need to do is start shipping water from Antarctica into Australia, and then just Bob's your uncle. There'll be no limit to it. But if we get into things like, you know, irrigation and, you know, the potentials of things like nuclear power, no, I don't perceive any limit to it. And nor did they. If you really read Malthus, like his final testament, he admits that the world is not overpopulated. What he really is worried about is the political consequences of the lower classes breeding out of control and this causing political instability. That's what he's afraid of.
They do not like that we're the 99%. That's the problem. And I'd love to talk to you more about that. We're going to go to a quick break, William, on TNT Radio. I'll see you soon.
The United Nations climate activists and delegates at the summit in Egypt chow down on gourmet meat while telling the rest of us to eat bugs.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
According to a report in the UK Daily Mail, officials and delegates at the United Nations Climate Summit were able to dine on an array of pricey meat and fish dishes served up during the conference. Angus beef medallion with sautéed potatoes, creamy salmon. The pricey menu did not go unnoticed by animal rights activists. The Animal Rebellion replied that this was a slap in the face. These world leaders need to look like they believe the rules. And Animal Rebellion added, quote, "This just looks like do what I say and not what I do." So the next time the United Nations or the World Health Organization is telling you to eat the bugs, just remind them that hypocrisy is live and well at United Nations climate summits. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
One day, my 8-year-old son, Michael, was playing football with his friends in the mud and got an infection that led to sepsis.
Sepsis is your body's toxic response to an infection that can lead to tissue damage to extremities.
They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more, go to sepsis.org.
TNTRadio.live.
I like the reporters. I like the current events.
Talk that I like. Politics I like.
A lot of news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. We're talking with William Kay. William, you said really the thing out loud that no one wants to say, that we're, I can imagine you'd be banned on Twitter for this one. But you're sort of alluding to the fact, are you not, that the world is in fact not overpopulated. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Oh, most definitely. We have the potential to dramatically increase the amount of food we produce. Huge amounts of land have been taken out of development. An amount of land almost equal to the size of Africa is now Wilderness Park. And the land conservationists, Malthusians all, tend to take the best lands out of development. Look what they're doing in Holland right now. They're taking 3,000 commercial farms out of development. That's going to make the other land worth a lot more, but it's also going to, you know, bring population pressures and things like that onto the people. If they were interested in feeding the population, they would be doing the reverse. We would be continuing to clear forests and expand the agricultural land. There's an enormous amount of land in the Americas, North America and South America, that's just sitting idle. We could easily, very easily, 10, 20 times increase the amount of food that we have. And if we get into things like greenhouses, I saw this little video about this guy who took over abandoned semiconductor factories in Japan, and he's growing lettuce in them. It's stacks and stacks of lettuce, and he's out of what looks like a really grim factory, and there's huge amounts of romaine lettuce just pouring out of these things. You know, a lot of the marijuana in Canada is grown indoors. Like, our ability to grow food indoors, our ability to expand agricultural production, almost without limit. Right. This world could support hundreds of billions of people. It's an absolute myth. It's an absolute lie. I was old enough to remember when the population scare was at its height. I was young at the time, like in my early teens. But there was a time that it eclipsed anything you saw from global warming. There was like every day on the news, there was more population scares about how the Earth was just, you know, humans were just gobbling the resources of the Earth. Now, the Club of Rome was big back then.
No way.
I had a radio show in Vancouver for a while, and I interviewed Canada's head of the Club of Rome, and he was this rich retired doctor from Ontario. And every topic I mentioned was caused by overpopulation. Housing?
Well, they just hate us, right, William?
Crime?
Is that what's at the core of it?
Overpopulation. Every issue, like transportation, this is just overpopulation. Everything was caused, every problem that he could see in the world was being caused by overpopulation. It was on his brain.
But not them, only us, right, William?
Typical amongst that community. Go ahead.
It's our overpopulation, not them, not the 1%. They can have big families. They can do what they like. They have a real issue with us. They dislike us intensely. Would you say that?
They fear and loathe us. They value stability above all else. But you're quite right about the hypocrisy, which is there. They have a sense of aristocratic privilege. It's actually really a fascist mentality, but they really do believe that they should not be held to the same standards as the common people. They really do believe that societies should be cleaved in such a way, is that there would be a libertine group on top that would get to sort of violate most of the rules that would be imposed upon the masses. They believe in that for sure. That is who this constituency is.
And I sort of get the feeling that they're enjoying this, William. You know, someone's sitting somewhere watching all these adverse reactions, deaths, and these autopsies with these horrible things being pulled out of people. They're sitting somewhere, Epstein Island, perhaps, I don't know, and they're watching all this unfold, and someone's getting pleasure out of it because they're pushing on. They're pushing on with their plan. They're so fame hungry. Someone like Klaus Schwab, Yuval Harari, Bill Gates, they're so fame hungry. They don't care that we're hurting. They don't care that they told us 5 minutes earlier, you know, you're all going to die of an upper respiratory infection and it escaped from a lab, but it's okay. We lied about it and said it was bats. And, you know, they don't care that we're hurting, that we're frightened for our families, for our children. They just keep pushing on, talking about chips in the brain and this is how the world is going to be. These people are literally psychopaths. I mean, how do you feel about the utter disregard that they have? Because if we were really on the brink of this nuclear war that we seem to be on the brink of just pre the midterm elections that seem to disappear after the midterm elections, why is now the time to talk about digital currency and chips in the brain?
Well, I'm not sure that the chips in the brain is really what we need to talk about right now, but they've got agendas. There are systemic things that are happening. There's certainly a concentration of wealth that is going on. Mm. You know, there was a day when a billionaire was pretty rare. Now there's a lot of people that seem to have tens of billions of dollars. And that concentration is sort of changing the world political stage. A lot of these people are truly globalists. They are thoroughly insulated against any harm or damage. They're not going to go hungry. They're not going to catch any virus. They are themselves completely insulated from it. It seems to me that they are almost seeking each other out, that they're sort of a global elite that is trying to come together. And you could anticipate from these people a callous disregard towards the suffering of the masses. A lot of these people they are now mingling with are the slum lords from India. They are the, you know, sort of the wealthiest people of some of these horrific third world countries, some of these, you know, monarchist Islamic dictatorships, something like that. That's who they're rubbing shoulders with now. People who have really elitist, backwards attitudes. And, you know, just for the FIFA World Cup, 500 immigrant laborers died in Qatar. That's the sort of callous attitude. It's called a sadistic insensitivity towards the plight of the masses. And they cultivate that. And amongst themselves, they project that. Because you know you're really amongst the elite if you have that sort of attitude like, oh dear, look, 100,000 people died. And they sort of, they have an ability just to not care. That is an important part of their culture, for sure, of the elites. And you see that over history. It's not something peculiar to this particular historical moment. But it seems to me, there's an elitism going on. And there's all kinds of gaming of the system going on.
Yeah.
Like the whole COVID thing was a gaming of the system by the pharmaceutical industry that just looted public treasuries. And you see the military-industrial complexes, and you see the climate-industrial complexes, and often they're bashing into each other. But these are the modern sort of macro structures that are like the dinosaurs of the day, and they're sort of stomping around the jungle, and we're hiding, trying not to get stomped on by them. But the main motivating forces that we have today are movements like the pharmaceutical-industrial complex, the military-industrial complex, the climate industrial complex. The population control is pretty much insinuated inside the environmental movement. They are pretty much one and the same. But they are a political movement.
They can't hide it anymore, can they, William? Because I think you said you were in Canada. And, I would have said pre-pandemic that Justin Trudeau was sort of what I would, as a conservative, describe as a lovable lefty. He seemed really lovely and very gentle and softly spoken. And yet, in the past week, he's told us very clearly that he supports Xi Jinping. And he's clearly saying that he supports him over the people who are protesting because they're being welded into buildings that are then going on to catch fire. And they don't care that we can see. They know that we know what they're doing, and yet they continue.
Well, the Trudeau family have quite a history in Canada. Certainly his father, no one who knew him before he became prime minister would ever suspect him of leftism. He was what's known as a Laurentian fascist, and from a wealthy family as well. And he had participated in anti-Semitic riots repeatedly. He was one of the organizers of a fascist group that was plotting to overthrow the government of Quebec during World War II. This is Pierre Trudeau. He was on the extreme right. He inherited quite a bit of money when he was a very young man, and a lot of people in the Quebec fascist movement were hoping that he would be their El Duce. And after World War II didn't go the way that he wanted, him and his friends, he then became this global citizen, went to Harvard, feigns that he's now a liberal. He never was. He was always devoted purely to Laurentia, which is what they call Quebec. And he was made prime minister of this country so that he would crush the left movement in Quebec, which he did. He declared martial law within about a year of becoming prime minister, and they rounded up hundreds of people without search warrants. They were held incognito. It was, I remember this. We lived under martial law for about 5 or 6 months. There was several hundred people were secretly arrested and taken to secret detention centers in Canada. I remember this very well. Then he also, I don't get the whole French-English thing, but he really, really screwed over English-speaking Canada at that time because we were in such a panic to repair this supposedly damaged country. In any event, that was his father, and his father was always a fanatical environmentalist as well. And I believe that Justin is just sort of a dim-witted actor. His instincts that he has, he's gotten from his father. You saw the fangs come out during the COVID protests, the declaration of a state of emergency. Several hundred people had their bank accounts frozen of themselves and their businesses. There's all kinds of dirty tricks going on, just totalitarian control of the mass media. All of the instincts of his father came out vividly during that moment, and they're only too anxious to do it again. And Christy Freeland, who's has about as much power in this government as he does, who was also a complete monster during the whole COVID thing, and was also, she is the granddaughter of a notorious Ukrainian Nazi, so she is making sure that as much money as we can, we are sending to the Ukrainian Nazis who are provoking the war in Ukraine. So no, there's a pseudo sort of liberal, pseudo sort of left. Like some of these people, lib left, that's the last thing these people are.
It's
the modern
shield,
neo-fascist
isn't it?
Movement is our experts at camouflage. They have always been experts at camouflage. They're a sort of a shape-shifting phenomenon. But these people, I wouldn't hesitate for a second to refer to a lot of the mainstream politicians today as fascists.
Yeah. Like wasn't Biden Trudeau's mom...
The crimes he's committing overseas.
Yeah. Trudeau's mom was very much a communist sympathizer, wasn't she?
Oh, no. I've never heard any of that. They visited Cuba once, that was it. And man, there's a certain segment of the population that are, they've sort of got communist on the brain, and they're accusing groups of being communist that aren't communist at all, and they pollute a lot of the conversation with that talk. You certainly see it in the climate skeptical community. They're always implying that this is some sort of a left-wing thing when it isn't left-wing at all. And if you really get into the environmental movement and the population control, this is off the charts right-wing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very, very clear to see that. Listen, I want to say thank you so much, William, for coming on the show. It's been fascinating. I would love to talk to you again. Please tell us the name of your most recent book so people can grab that.
That's the Mifepristone. But if you Google my name,